Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I keep a short list of writers who I have always wanted to interview, and occasionally I get lucky and I can cross one off the list, and I've got one on the phone with me right now. I'd like to welcome to the program Jimmy Breslin. Hello, Jimmy.
How do you do?
Very well now, sir.
Good.
I've been reading your work for a long time, and I was delighted to see that you put out a new book, and I had an excuse to interview you.
Good.
You've written about Branch Rickey.
Yes.
How did this project come about?
They called me from the that series they have of short books put out by the publisher. And they've got 50 people wrote these books, and they asked me to do one. Now, whether I said Rickey or they said it, I believe I said Branch Rickey. That's a back topic that they wanted that I knew something about. And I said I would do it. I'm sorry.
No worries, sir.
I got rid of it. I got to change these phones here. All right.
Do you need to do something with that?
I don't know what to do.
The phone's ringing?
No, it won't ring anymore. I'll take it off the hook.
Okay,
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
We have some listeners out there who probably have never heard of Branch Rickey.
Yeah. Now, he was in Brooklyn as the head of the Brooklyn Dodgers baseball team in the National League at the time. He's out of Ohio Wesleyan, Methodist studies, religious man in baseball. He played some baseball. And he decided during World War II, the end of World War II, to bring a black into baseball. The rules were against blacks at all times. He was going to do it as a religious exercise. Way down in the meaning, in his wanting to do it, was the chance he could sell a lot of tickets for having this black guy. But that was last. First was to put him in there. So he had a pound of paper, he called it, reading on a ball player named Jackie Robinson, who was out of UCLA and then into the minor leagues with Kansas City Monarchs of the Negro League. Now, he decided that was the player they were going to try to bring in. He asked Clyde Sukforth, who was from Maine, the state of Maine, he was as white as your bones, to go out to Chicago, where the Kansas City Monarchs was playing in the Black League, to talk to Robinson, who was on that team. Well, he went out there, he didn't know one black from the other, and he didn't know a black from a white guy. He was an amazing person when it came to other people. So he got to the ballpark, Comiskey Park, he bought a program, he looked up Robinson with the number, and he went to the railing of the box seat he bought a ticket to. He leaned over and he asked the first black player to come by, which one is Jackie Robinson? He had no idea which one was Robinson. Hmm. So the guy pointed him out and he called Jackie. Could he talk to him? Robinson came over. And Sukforth, the main white, talked to him. And Robinson was moved. This guy was, whoever he was seemed real. He couldn't believe a white guy was real. Mm. But it was. He wanted him to come to Brooklyn with him. And he did. The next morning, they're in Montague Street in Brooklyn, and they go up to Branch Rickey's office. They sit down, Sukforth in the corner, Robinson at the desk across from Rickey, who said to him, "Do you know why you're here?" And Robinson said, "Yes, to play for some black team. You must be starting here in Brooklyn." Rickey said, "No, that isn't why you're here at all. We brought you here to play for the Brooklyn Dodgers." That put Robinson in a shock that took a long time that afternoon to wear off what was going on. Well, meanwhile, Rickey pulled his jacket off and began to abuse Robinson for his color. he began to throw punches at him to say, the next thing you're going to get. And he imitated the worst of whites. And Robinson got into it finally. And he understood the promise Mickey was making him to the skies that he would never react when the whites started yelling at him. He said he would. Whereupon Ricky just threw him a contract and said, sign this. Everything became real. Hmm. And he said then they had to wait until World War II ended so they could talk. And they didn't want to upset anybody or talk about race when they've got this war on. At this time, Ricky lived in Forest Hills section of Queens County. And the pastor of a church down the block, a big, classy Protestant church, was lifted by the army, taken away. Ricky picked up a missile, walked to the church, climbed the steps to the pulpit, and took over the job of being the minister during the last weeks of World War II. He had an audience, a congregation of white women. Their husbands were away in the war. Hmm. Ricky lectured them on religion. And then he reached a point where he just decided to tell them that he was going to do a thing that would further religious beliefs in this county, in this parish that they were in. And it was to put a black into baseball. He made them swear that they would not talk about it until the war was over. So these women listened to him lecture about putting a black in a baseball for several Sundays, at the conclusion of which they went out into the world knowing something big was going to happen in baseball, which they couldn't tell anybody about. Mm-hmm. And that was how it came about. The war ended, and Ricky put Jackie Robinson into the lineup.
Jimmy Breslin joins us. He's written a book about Branch Rickey. It's part of the Penguin Live series. He joins us by telephone from somewhere, I would guess, in the New York area.
Manhattan. West side of Manhattan.
Jimmy, you actually met Branch Rickey.
Yeah, well, wait a minute now. Let's get the years right. In 1947, when that happened, 1945, the war ending, what am I? I'm 15?
I think you were 8, weren't you?
I don't know. I was no 15.
When you met Ricky?
No, a little younger than 15. That's a cinch. At any rate, I went to a football game in the rain at Ebbets Field, the Dodgers ballpark, and it was a heavy rain, and the team was the Brooklyn Dodgers, football Dodgers, playing the Chicago Rockets. I remember that team. They were in the National Football League. It's changed, rearranged since. But that was that night. In the pouring rain, nobody showed. Finally, I'm sitting there with a kid from the neighborhood, Rusty Wild. We went to see the game in the rain. We took advantage. I'll bet you somebody gave us tickets. So we're there. And then suddenly behind us in the upper deck where we were sitting, came Branch Rickey, who spread a blanket over himself so you don't freeze to death in the rain, a cold, rainy night. And he sat there. So we told him something. The best thing about football here in Brooklyn was that Sidney Luckman came from here, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he just looked at us. Yeah, right from down here, right from down Flatbush Avenue. He went to Erasmus Hall High School. Then he went up to Columbus, and now he's out with the Chicago Bears, which put him into anger shock. He couldn't even talk to us because he was being told that he blew the best football player anybody had ever seen. Sidney Luckman was a major figure in football, quarterback at Chicago, passing. So he got so mad he wouldn't talk to us. And that was our introduction to Branch Rickey.
And in the book, you describe an incident that happened in 1944 when Jackie Robinson was in the military, which could have really changed history.
Robinson's dream. Who,
that when he was stopped on the bus.
Yeah, and yeah, he was pushed around. Ricky had that. It was he had the papers for the court martial case. He had everything on Robertson. He had a pound of paper on him. That would only make him his interest in Robertson more fierce than ever before. That he was messed around in a court martial for his race.
Hmm. And just by a fluke, he was the first one, because it could have been Don Newcomb.
The first to be named.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think it was going to be Robertson.
Yeah.
The UCLA background, that you could talk to him and tell him not to react when they abuse you.
Hmm.
Had to be a smart, a bright fellow, and he regarded Robertson as being quite bright, and the scholastic background would seem to say so. That was a big thing.
Well, I know that the fans in Cincinnati were particularly rude. You probably heard about that.
Yeah, well, they were rude everywhere, but they had no chance to maintain that rudeness because the color of the grandstands was dramatically changing each time Robertson appeared.
So Branch Rickey did get his wish in a lot of ways.
Well,
he was selling tickets.
That was the big thing. He had the opening day at Ebbets Field with Robertson in the lineup. They had 18,000 blacks, if I recall reading it right. They never had that many before interested in a white sport. It was that day. And wherever you went, including Cincinnati, they could have their way of being the quaint Southern customs voiced. That would diminish after a while as the number of blacks in the stands increased.
Branch Rickey is our subject. Jimmy Breslin wrote about him. It's a biography of the Penguin Live series. These are short little biographies. How did you decide what to put in? You probably had to be pretty selective.
Well, they wanted it short biographies, as you say. Well, I'm coming out of tabloid newspapers. I'm used to that.
Uh-huh.
I can make it as short as you want.
Yeah.
Seven words are better than 10 at any time, you know. So I had no problem with that. What do you use? I felt to use what I was talking about, how they brought him into baseball at that meeting in Ricky's office. I thought that was a fine, dramatic scene, which it was, which it is.
Uh-huh. And that's what we remember Branch Rickey for.
Yep. Well, it was a great act on a part of what's right in the world. The minute Jackie Robinson put his first spiked shoe onto a baseball field, an American baseball field, everything changed. The earth under that foot spun.
Hmm.
And this country changed. Other countries around the world changed. It'll take years and years until the full impact makes itself known. But for that time, the first decade was a great change in America. Great. I mean, you put blacks into kindergartens that day.
Mm-hmm. Jimmy Breslin joins us. He's written a book about Branch Rickey. And on the rare occasions when I think about how I might like to be remembered, I think, you know, I'd like to be remembered for being able to actually have a conversation with somebody like Jimmy Breslin. How would you like to be remembered?
I don't know. I'm selective memories.
Uh-huh. Well, you've had this long career.
Keep me innocent in your memories.
Keep you innocent?
Yeah, there's a lot of guilty pleas here I'd like to shed.
Okay, well, you've certainly had a long and interesting career. A mutual friend of ours, Bill Young in Chicago, called me this morning, and I mentioned I was going to be talking to you.
Yes.
And he said, yeah, ask him about the time we went out drinking with Studs Terkel and Mike Royko.
Where is he? That both of them, you know, I'm going to Chicago for the trial of Largo, the governor. And I'm thinking of, who am I going to get there? I'll get Mike Royko dead. Turkle, gone. I said, what am I going to do in Chicago? Now, who is this?
Bill Young.
Bill Young, where is he at?
He's in Chicago. I could give him your number if you want.
Yes, please. Where is he working? What's he doing?
He's still taking around authors. He's still doing what he's been doing for years. That's how he met you.
Yeah. Boy, ask him, call me.
So you're going in for Blago's trial, eh?
Yeah.
When is that?
Next week.
Oh,
I
my.
Mean, it starts the 25th or 4th.
Well, I'll tell Bill to get a hold of you
tell
then.
Tell him to call me.
I will.
All right. Boy, that's a plus here.
Yeah,
wow.
I think the last time he saw you, you came in and you visited Studs after Studs fell down the stairs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a loss.
Yeah. I think, would he be 100 this year? I think he was born in 1911.
Studs, he should be 200. What's the difference? We needed him.
We sure did. Well, Jimmy, I'm just going to throw out a couple of really short little subjects, and I wondered if you might
give me a
comment. What about this one? Son of Sam.
He wrote me, it came from out of, there were murders. Nobody knew where the shootings were coming from, murders of young women. And then came this letter, and it was from Son of Sam, and it was this crazy printing letter, and he was the guy that was doing the shooting, and that began an association, whether I liked it or not. And I had one night that summer that the letters came to me at the newspaper, the New York Daily News. And I was out with my wife for one night that summer. We were at West Hampton Beach. We went into a bar on Main Street to have one drink. And the traffic outside a busy street was going by slowly because it was starting to rain. And it kept going. Later that night, they grabbed a car because of the license plates on that street. And it had this Berkowitz in it, who was Son of Sam. And they asked him, they went over what he was doing, and he was there to shoot me. He said the dog with him, he called himself Son of Sam. He had no dog. He made the dog up in his mind. I told him to keep going, not stop. That's the only reason he didn't get out of the car and shoot me. I'm at the bar, I was sitting in the saloon window. And I had to come to the police headquarters. They wanted me to identify him. And I looked and I saw the face. That's the guy.
Oh, my.
Now, could we take him and throw him out the window, I said.
Oh, my.
That's the Son of Sam summer.
The Son of Sam. And he picked you.
Yep. He was going to shoot me. All the women he was shooting, young women. And I'd be the young man. Young man. I mean, the man.
He's still around, isn't he?
He's still in the can, and let him rot there. I don't ever want to hear about him.
Yeah. Speaking of crime, what do you think about organized crime these days?
Is it here?
Is there still some around in New York?
I don't know. Yeah, they're in court talking.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Oh, you can't keep them quiet. What was ever left? It's a dying art, being a boss of mafia. There's nobody. The Howard Beach, where John Gotti reigned on the sidewalks across Bay Boulevard, there's nobody. One gangster left.
How about this subject? Something you know a lot about. Tabloid journalism.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Are they going to be here in 2 years? I'm making a bet no.
The newspapers or just tabloid journalism?
Well, I mean, the tabloids, I can't see them making it.
Uh-huh.
The big newspapers, what are they? The New York Times, and they keep going on to wire more and more. Who knows what they're going to do?
They seem to be losing writers, too.
Yep, you lose everybody. It's changing.
Did you have a favorite newspaper that you wrote for?
The New York Daily News.
For sure.
I mean, I was there the longest. It was the best for me. and it's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, it will be, I think.
Okay, one more topic.
Well, the Chicago Tribune ain't healthy.
No, they're not. One more topic. New York City.
Yes, better than ever.
It's better than ever?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
It's the only place in the world to live. Why are you wasting your time elsewhere?
Well, I sure love to
visit. The streets are so crowded with people. Who knows where they're from? Manhattan now, you barely can walk the streets. They're so crowded with people. And that's a healthy sign. I love it.
Uh-huh. So you're going to be in Chicago next week for Blago's trial. Are you covering it?
Yep. I got to do a book so far. Yep.
How's that coming along? He's a fascinating character.
Yes. Yes, I just spoke to him before. Yes.
You just spoke to him?
Yeah, I speak to him during the day.
So he's collaborating with the book?
Well, we're talking. We're talking. He's fine.
What's he like?
Well, he's no dope.
No, he couldn't be to get elected governor.
What's that?
Getting elected governor of Illinois, you'd have to be pretty smart, I think.
Well, the other thing is there was supposed to be $1 billion stolen. He happened to be sitting on huge money. So I go out there to see him to start if I'm going to do this. And I'm not there a couple of times, and I don't smell money.
Mm.
And not close even. After a while, I began to say, what the hell are they worried about this guy? He ain't got any money. And the answer is he doesn't. You could see that when he had to start worrying about paying lawyers. Huge amount of money needed for this case, and he doesn't have it.
Hmm. So, what does money smell like?
It looks. It's got a look, a smell. It's got a, you know when it's there.
Okay.
You could tell. But, well, if you come around me, you could give the answer to that.
Okay.
He's got nothing.
Okay. Isn't it true that you used to go to work in an ambulance?
Once.
Just once?
Once.
Yeah.
Oh, I hitched rides in ambulances, but once I went for real.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was knocked down.
You were knocked down?
Well, I mean, life.
Oh.
And
okay.
I had to be into a newspaper office. Had to be.
Oh.
And I couldn't find any cab or anything. I got in an ambulance and went to work.
I love it.
I was in very bad shape from the night before.
Yeah.
Desperate shape.
Well, you've kind of cleaned up your act, though, haven't you?
No, my liver did that.
Okay. Well, isn't a journalist supposed to drink a lot? Isn't that
kind of... I don't think it ever helped.
No?
It helped me, I say it didn't. Doesn't do anything for you to give you a hangover under which you could barely move the next morning.
Yeah. Well,
but it's fun at night.
Well, I knew that Studs liked his cocktails.
Oh, boy. We had fun.
In fact, he made me a cocktail once. It was one of the high points of my life, I think.
Oh, he was terrific.
It was a Stoli. I think he was out of gin.
He's terrific.
Well,
that's
Jimmy...
a great loss.
It's always been a dream of mine to talk to you, and we really appreciate you taking the time to be on the program.
Thank you for calling. You embarrassed me by being nice.
It's our pleasure, and I will give Bill your phone number.
Yeah,
so
please do.
I'm sure if you get a message from Bill, you'll know why he's calling.
Oh, I'll call him. Don't worry. Good.
All right.
Good. Thank you.
And when is this Blago book going to come out, do you think?
I don't know. As soon as I can write it.
That's Blagojevich.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
We'll look for that one.
God bless.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you, sir.
Take care. You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO, and that was Jimmy Breslin. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. Every week when we edit the recordings that eventually become the Book Nook program, Chris Hertzler over at Soundspace and I, we talk about what to leave in and what to take out. And We decided to leave in the sound of Jimmy Breslin hanging up the phone there because I think it was a really important part of the interview just to hear him hanging up like that. And what a character. What a wonderful thing it was to actually talk to Jimmy Breslin about Son of Sam and about his new biography of Branch Rickey. And in his biography, he gives us a little hint of how Branch Rickey had that seed planted in his mind to break the color line in Major League Baseball with Jackie Robinson and the Brooklyn Dodgers. I'm going to read you a little excerpt from Jimmy's biography that tells you more about when that seed was planted. This is from Chapter 3. Quote, "Branch Rickey never changes his tale. The fire in him to fix a nation began in 1904 on the practice fields at Ohio Wesleyan University, where he first saw Charlie Thomas play baseball. There is an away game against the University of Notre Dame at South Bend, Indiana. Rickey, as student coach, booked his team into the Oliver Hotel there. Reservations were made well in advance. The hotel was delighted. After all, these were fine Methodists coming in. Maybe they weren't Catholics, but they knew how to behave. The catcher for Rickey's team is Charlie Thomas. His sloping shoulders and thick neck proclaim him a hitter. The big young black hands are those of a catcher. Charlie Thomas is the first of his race ever to play at Ohio Wesleyan. This puts the school only a half century ahead of the good Catholics of Notre Dame. The Ohio Wesleyan players came into the hotel cheerfully, Charlie Thomas among them. Then they reached the room clerk, whom Rickey described as being ready to defend his hotel to the death rather than let this young black man inside. The clerk suggested that Thomas go to the YMCA. Instead, Rickey sent the team manager to the Y to see about lodging for the entire squad. He reported back quickly that there were no rooms. Thomas, humiliated, said he would go back to school. Rickey took his arm and told him he was staying. He asked to see the hotel manager and mesmerized the fellow, reaching an agreement that Thomas could stay in Rickey's room until a suitable black family was found to house him. No such thing was ever going to happen. Rickey took Thomas up to his room, then ordered a cot, and called down to the manager, "Under no circumstances will I allow Thomas to leave." Thomas sat in Rickey's room and began crying. He rubbed one big hand over the other, saying, "Black skin, black skin! If only I could rub it off and make it white." Rickey said, "Stop it. If you can't beat this, how do you expect me to?" End quote. Tune in for the Book Nook next week when my guest will be Philip Kerr. His new Bernie Gunther novel is Field Gray. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.